I'll just test this thing to see if it is working. I think it is now, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're at Mr. Fred Edgerton's house today at 69 Penryn Beach West. That's correct, isn't it? So, yeah, I'd like to ask you, if we've been talking about these pictures, we've been going through all those now. I'd just like to ask, where did you come from? Where were you born, Mr. Edgerton?
I was born in Walsall, near Birmingham.
Ah. Oh, so you're a Brummie then? I didn't know that.
Well, more or less.
Yes. Ah, yeah. And before you joined the commission, you... What was it? Or did you go straight to the army? Or?
No, I was an apprentice civil engineer before the war with the Grand Union Canal Company in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And... then when war was declared, I thought I had to do something. I volunteered to go in the engineers. They were asking for people in the engineers as officers, junior officers, and... I'd been in the officers' training corps at school and got what is called Certificate A. So I went for an interview and I passed that, but I was turned down on the medical because I was virtually blind in one eye.
Well.
So I was graded grade 3 on that account. But... later on, the requirements, physical requirements, that is, must have changed because I was called up in February 1940, and at that time my grade, medical grade, became 2A vision, which meant that I was... physically fit, but visually defective, having one dud eye. Now I was put in the pay corps.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
I was there for just under a couple of years, by which time I'd become sergeant. Mm-hmm. And... but as as an apprentice civil engineer, I'd been a member of the Institution of Civil Engineers in that capacity. And my name must have been forwarded to the military authorities by the Institution of Civil Engineers as a possible recruit for the engineers. Mm-hmm. And so I was singled out and sent to Royal Engineers OCTU, that was the Officer Cadet Training Unit. And I was trained for 6 months in all the Royal Engineers mm-hmm. requirements, including explosives, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And... in December 1942, I was commissioned as a second lieutenant.
Wow, yeah.
So I was in the engineers from that time until the end of the war. Because of my defective vision, I was unable to be sent into a frontline unit. I was with what's called an LFC, or Line of Communication mm-hmm. unit. That means one of these support groups. And anyway, there was nothing special which I had to do during the war, fortunately. Mm-hmm. During my training period, I was sent, of course, on a Bailey Bridge course. in order to train the men in my unit on how to build a Bailey Bridge.
Well, that came in handy.
Came in useful later on with the Forestry Commission back in 1947-48. Anyway, that's getting ahead a bit. I was demobbed in 1946, July I think it was, and then I went on relief work back to Germany with the Save the Children Fund. And while I was there, a friend of mine, Major Bethel, in the engineers, he told me that the Forestry Commission were looking for engineers and that I should apply, which I did. He was, at that time, with the Forestry Commission in Aberystwyth, which was the Conservancy office, or the Directorate office, rather. Well, I applied, I was interviewed, and ultimately appointed, and was posted to Corris.
When was that, then?
That was in 1947, June 47. As the area engineer.
Yeah. So, your colleagues then, you mentioned this man that mentioned the commission to you.
Yes.
Who did you have under you then, working for you, as it were? You know, did you have any clerk of works? Or?
Oh, yes. Yeah? we had a clerk of works, Percy Vincent. He was from Norfolk. He was getting on. He must have been in his 50s, I suppose. He was a carpenter and he'd lost a couple of fingers on some machine or other. I don't think there's much else I can tell you about him.
Oh, was he the only one you had? You had more than one?
I was I was put in charge also of Cordy Brennan, and there was a clerk of works, Meach. I can't remember his first name. He looked after the construction there. Most of the men, all of the men virtually, for Cordy Brennan, came from Trasvineth and Blaenafestiniog.
Oh, yeah. There was quite a lot of men working, I believe, at that time.
Oh, yes. I think at one time, in the early days, there must have been getting on for 100 men because... there were some Polish soldiers or ex-soldiers who'd been accommodated in the camp at Ganfluid there.
Yeah.
They worked on the road for a while, but it wasn't long after before they were dispersed. I don't know where to.
Yeah. Yeah. Were they classed as a dispersed person to begin with, were they, or they weren't prisoners of war, were they?
Oh, no. They were ex-army, Polish army, who'd been fighting on our side.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, the work that you did then was mainly road making. I take it there was no... am I right in... It was just the road making you were involved with, nothing at all to do with tracks and what have you on recreation or things like that, was it?
Well, all the recreation part of it came a bit later on.
Yeah.
There was no plans or action taken to provide recreation facilities back in 1947. No.
So I take it a forester would come to you and say, Mr. Edgington, I'd like a road done up there. Is that the procedure then, or?
No, no, the road planning was done in conjunction with the district officer.
Yeah.
And obviously the head forester would also have an important role to play in that. But at that time, the roads were positioned to meet the requirements of the extraction of the timber by horse, yeah, which was long then, yeah, tushing tracks. So this meant that the roads had to be at the bottom or near the bottom of slopes, because the horses couldn't be expected to haul heavy loads uphill, yeah, particularly for those steep slopes. Mm-hmm. And that changed, of course, a bit later on when mechanisation came into the picture, because then it was possible to winch timber uphill and roads were placed to suit that, so that timber was fed in from both sides of roads, making them more efficient. But nevertheless, the layout was done in conjunction with the district officer and head forester. And
what I'm trying to put is to put it as simple as possible, that where that road went to,
yes,
was that your decision, or was it made higher up, or?
Oh no, it was basically my decision, because yeah, I had to keep within the limits at the start of gradient, maximum gradient of 1:6.
Was it 1:6? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Later on, it was realised that such steep grades resulted in very heavy maintenance costs because of the wear and tear on the road surface. And it was decreed that the steepest gradient on the road should be 1:10. So that, of course, affected the road's planning of the layout significantly.
Yeah. A lot costlier to do the road then, the 1:10, as it was a 1:6. You could go over the brow instead of through it, as it were.
I suppose, in a way, but no doubt things balanced out in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you said, right, we're going to be doing the road here. What about the surveying of the road then? Was that down to you?
I did that myself, because at that time there were no surveyors.
No.
So I did the planning, the survey, and subsequently the construction.
Yeah, and the application had to go to the council, or was there anything like that
the
then?
The council wasn't involved. Except that in cases where a new access from a public road
to join,
was
yeah,
required,
yeah, yeah,
into a forest,
yeah,
and then we had to meet the requirements of the council in that respect.
Okay. So more or less you were a one-man band, as it were, doing this thing.
Yes, it was a sort of pioneer outfit in a way, with just myself to some degree.
Did you come across any calamities by doing it that way? Because there must have been some mistake somewhere along the line that you did, or was it perfect?
How do you mean?
Well, you know, it was more or less, it was not a trial and error, but it was a very pioneering type of work. You know, the 1:6, you say, decided, well,
yeah,
who decided, well, this is very costly and it's dangerous or whatever, and we'll do it at 1:10. Was that your decision, or did it come from, or a joint decision? Or?
Oh, that was my decision when
yeah,
I would have to go out and recce that's a possible line, make a reconnaissance.
Yeah.
And if I found a lot of rock or something that seemed virtually insurmountable, I'd have to look at another possible alternative.
Yeah.
And so in some areas where it was very difficult and rocky, I would be spending days or perhaps a week or two even to find a suitable alignment. So that was my problem.
So after some time, you must have thought to yourself, well, I need somebody else to either help me. When did the surveyor start coming into the act? And was it Maxwell was the first, or was Brian Maxwell one of the first you got in? Or?
Eric John,
yeah.
Was the first surveyor, if I remember rightly. And Maxwell came later, and later still Duncan Robertson. But at no time did we ever have more than two surveyors, I think it was, on the staff. they covered virtually all of the North Wales area that I was dealing with by that time, but that was that must have been 10 to 15 years after I started. The original survey work and so on was all, as you said, a one-man band.
And your office was at?
Initially, Kynas Camp. That was where I started, at Corrie's. And then, subsequently, my office became the camp at Ganllwyd. By that time, I was looking after not only the Dovey area, but the Coedibrynny area and the Gwydir area. We started work in Gwydir, if I remember rightly, about 1952, after a bad fire up at the Glynn area. And we had to get a road in there to get the timber out before the honey fungus affected the timber or something like that. So that was a matter of some urgency.
Because I remember some of the old rockmen telling me that the roads department, there was work there from when it started, 20 years' work.
Yes.
But it's gone along a lot more than that. But I remember somebody saying that there would be about 20 years' work. So you did say something there. You went to Kynas Camp.
Yes.
Was the office, where was it? Was it in the little Nissen huts, or what do you call
in
that?
In one of the huts, yes.
Oh, And where did you live then? Were you locally?
I was in digs with Mrs. Jones up at Tremavon in Aberystwyth.
And this was before you got married, or?
Yes, I went there when I joined the commission. That was June 47. And then my wife came over, fiance as it was at the time, in December 47, and we got married in the registry office in Dalgetley.
And then you lived in Aberystwyth after, or?
I lived in Tremavon there, in Aberystwyth, until my wife was expecting her first child, and then we moved up to the camp in Gantluid.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
At that time, of course, I was looking after Cody Brennan as well.
What was your mode of transport then, Mr. Edgington?
I had a Fordson van.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that your private van or a
forest? No, a forest,
forest van. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Right. So after things started to change then, everything seemed to be mechanised and what have you, did you move then up to this part of North Wales, or did you stay down in Gantluid when things started to change with the, you know, you had the Grange, the... You hired a lot of stuff to begin with, I believe, off Granger.
We did. That's true, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, when did it start coming that the forestry started bringing their own stuff in? Was that at your request, or...?
Oh, no, that was a hired decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that's when things started to change for the better, as it were, then, I would say. Yeah?
Yes.
And you moved then?
I was asked to move up to Gwydr, to the Metascoed area, and I couldn't find any accommodation there. I applied for a council house, even along by Pentredee, and I was told by the local council they couldn't give me one. I wasn't a worker. So anyway, the commission had built three houses in Penmachnow there, and they offered me one, so I was glad to accept that, and so we moved there in when was it? September. I'm just trying to think when it was. September 52, I think it was. There was no electricity in the houses at that time. Oh. There'd been no electricity. Come to the village, we had half a moment. I can't just remember for sure. I'd have to ask my wife. She'd know about that. But
so anyway, Penmachnow was your home then, and your office
began,
was.
Well, I worked from my home at that time. Oh. I had one of the rooms there to keep all my office stuff.
And the people that were working for you then, your clerk of works, who were there then, they had changed, I take it, or? When did Ted Dummett come onto the scene, as it were?
By that time, there'd been a change in the setup. And I'd handed over Dovey to another engineer, Pat Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of him, but is it Pat Thomas?
Yes. And I was looking after more Gwydr and... Corwin, Birgellet, Anglesey, and Clwyd, that area.
Mm-hmm. And working under you, who was here? Did you have one or two clerks?
There was Reg Harper. He lived in Pentonby at Betsacoid. One of his daughters married one of the foresters. I can't just remember his name. Was it Harrison? Was his name? Or Hughes. That was it.
I'm trying to think now. Harper, there was a Gillian Harper and a Francis Harper.
I think it was Francis, I'm not sure.
But didn't Francis marry Dave Whitmarsh? I'm sure you know the one we saw, the forester with the beard in one of the photographs. Yeah. It must have been her sister that married this other one.
Yeah, it couldn't be. Mm-hmm. Because I know that they lived in the forester's house at Aber on the Mangor.
Because Aber was in your patch as well.
Yes.
So you had this Mr. Harper and...
It's a little difficult to disentangle it all.
Don't worry about it. At least that Mr. Harper's a new one on me. I didn't know he'd been
He was the clerk of works when we started at Howard Vaur.
And did you only have one clerk of works then?
There was another chap, I've forgotten his name. He was rather elderly and he retired 2 or 3 years after I knew him, but he started the roads at Corwin with me.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
I didn't know him anyway. So it was after that Ted Dummett came onto the scene, was it?
Yes. He came from South Wales.
Yeah.
There'd been some bit of a fallout, I believe, down there.
Yeah.
And so he'd been sent up to North Wales and,
So that's roughly more or less the whole story more or less now, isn't it, of your involvement with the roads department, which more or less spanned, how many years did that span? 35 years.
I started off roads in Kerry first of all, and one or two of the places down that area. I also had the later on I was looking after the Oswestry district. We had some roads down towards Oswestry to do.
The race course comes to mind. The race course they used to call the top of Oswestry, Salatin, that way, was it? Going through Western Rhyn. It's strange.
I remember the names vaguely, but there was no forestry work there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the names of the forest
areas. You know, the whole... time you've been involved with this, have you come across any, you know, you do the roads through virgin ground, have you come across anything of interest, archaeological interest at all, or nothing at all? Or
I haven't, but...
You haven't, yeah.
No, I believe they did with the ploughing in some areas.
The actual physical doing of the road, we've come across two of those things. There was another matter of interest to me. I know they were knocked down because of safety reasons. Some of these old houses. Do you remember the particular one I'm interested in at the moment is the one as you go up from Dolwydd Ellen up to the Cwm Penamnan. Do you remember the old tie there that was knocked down because of safety reasons? You don't remember who knocked it down or...
No. There's an old ruin on the right, halfway up.
That's it.
I don't know whether that had been knocked down at that time. I don't think it was anything.
I think it was the forest who did knock it down. No, I was just thinking whether...
I think it was just a ruin when...
Oh, yeah, there was nobody living in it. No, but it had a roof on it. What I was... I'm trying to... after, there was no photographs at all taken of it before it was knocked down, was it? Nothing like that would have been... Yeah. No, I'm just... That's my personal interest more than anything.
Yes.
Yeah. And because I remember we knocked the old bridge, do you remember, up in the Bulch, behind the Bulch. We put the new bridges up in the road there, the concrete bridges. I remember knocking an old bridge down there.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to think about that as well, but that was some time ago. So, well, yeah, I think I'm quite happy with what I've had now. We've been on what... Yeah, good, over half an hour now. So, and with what Mania Scots as well, I'll thank you for what there is.
There's a bit of duplication, I think.
Well, yeah, but it's better that than not at all. You know, it's better. So, yeah, we'll swap notes once we've. Anyway, thank you very much, Mr. Edgington.
Okay, lovely. You're welcome.
Thank you.